Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Audio Frontier.
Welcome to Wrestling After Marks. It's the marks after WrestleMania weekend. We're all a bit bleary-eyed. We're all still suffering from the consequences of drink. But I welcome my fellow marks to the podcast. My name's John, and my tag team partners are... He's bigger than the amount of wrestling content you've been able to get this week. It's Big Alex.
It's been too much, John. It's been too much. I always think I'm a wrestling fan until the week after WrestleMania. Then I'm like, no more wrestling. No more wrestling ever. There's been
We're about to talk for an hour about wrestling. And our other partner in the podcast, he writes for Inside the Ropes. He is the lead writer, the big cheese. It's Gary Cassidy.
Aye, and
El Jefe
is the way the Spanish, I've still not looked up what the other word was.
I know.
I actually done the full thing sober, so I didn't actually drink at all through any of the past six nights of wrestling we've had.
How did you
Is
survive?
That called professional integrity? Because I didn't know that existed in Scottish journalism. Well done.
No, it doesn't normally a drink, but it's a wee bit of a mix of the health kick and just knowing that it was going to be six nights of staying up until whatever time. So aye, more for me, I wish I'd cracked open a couple of cans last night, but yeah. I know we'll get into that.
Oh, talking of which, thank you everyone who got involved in our watch along on Saturday night. It was a great laugh. We all had a few drinks, and a big shout out to Johnny, one of our Patreons, who fell asleep during the event, and all that was left is him snoring on the Zoom feed, and we had to mute him. So shout out to Johnny, really good event, thanks to everyone who got involved. Everyone was so desperate to have a night two that I basically just set, I couldn't do night two, I was watching it with the kids, and so I just set them, and they entertained themselves, so there were a few people involved in that as well, so it was great to see, and just a brilliant community that we have on Wrestling Daft. So thanks to all our listeners, and thank you for getting involved. Remember, if you want to do get involved in any of that sort of stuff, you know where to go, patreon.com/wrestlingdaft.
I like the way you kind of refer to them like your kids there. You know, and I just let them go and they entertain themselves. I'm really, really proud of them. Nobody died. It was fine.
I know, they were great. They were great. So we were going to do things a bit differently on the marks this week because there's been so much wrestling. We just thought we'd look back at the full week and have a bit of a retrospective of what's went on this week in the wrestling, because it's just all been about WWE. We've had Stand Deliver, we've had SmackDown, we've had WrestleMania, and then it was the Raw after WrestleMania. We've also had the Hall of Fame. There's been so much. Chris Jericho and Austin doing Broken Skulls. So much content. But we just thought we'd just go from the start and get to the end by looking at the kind of highlights, the lowlights of the week. So, where do you start? I guess you go back to last Wednesday, and it was night one of Stand and Deliver for NXT. Looking at the card, we had Kushida versus Pete Dunne, with Dunne going over Kushida. We had the Gauntlet and Eliminator.
How did you react to
Dunne? I told you so here. I'll just say.
Right, okay.
Because there was a bit of debate on this one, wasn't there, John?
There was. Well, let's start off with that then. Dunne versus Kushida. There was obviously the pre-show as well, where Toni Storm finally got a win. With Zoe Stark, they were fighting together, and Zoe Stark finally got a win. Though it was really interesting to see Toni Storm, from someone who's unbeatable on NXT UK almost. She's getting beaten on the pre-show now.
She went from title picture to now putting people over. So I wonder what they're going to do with Toni Storm.
Yeah, I'll be interested. See, obviously they changed her character as well.
I tell you, last night would have been a perfect place to see her, but maybe we'll see her on Friday.
Potentially. We'll get to that further down. That's miles away. Yeah, Gary, that's miles away.
Speaking 4 hours about that.
So, Dunn versus Kushida. A great opening match, I think we'll agree. I just thought they could have done with a bit more time in that. It was just really warming up. It was great, you know. Gary, you called it last week. You obviously done defeating Kushida. Does that put him in the title picture?
I'm not sure. Again, it's a bit of an odd one because the title picture is a bit of a... I mean, carrying Cross isn't he going to lose it anytime soon, you wouldn't think. Not to give away spoilers of where we're going to go in a couple of minutes. But I don't know. You think that anybody getting into that, it's a bit of a losing battle they're fighting for the start. But I guess Pete Dunne doesn't really need to be NXT champion anytime soon. Unless they do have, you know, he's got a lot of people that could come back, depending on how long the rivalry is, to help him. But I think they're going to make Pete Dunne a major player. I just see that happening. Obviously, we've seen him both nights as well. No wrestling, but I just think they're going to make him a major player in NXT. So just had a feeling he was going to beat Kushida. Poor Kushida, because, you know, brilliant match. And Kushida, I don't remember having a bad match. So,
no, he never has a bad match. Some brilliant spots in it. I just thought it was... They kind of rushed through it a wee bit. It was almost like it was quite... We rushed through it, and I just thought you give them guys, I'd like to see a rematch and give them more time, whether that's a submission match or something like that, and just give them more time because it was great. I thought, well, I'm a massive Mark Kushida, but it was just I thought it was great. Mark, Alex, this seems like it was would be a match right up your street as well.
This was the match that convinced me to watch NXT instead of AEW on my normal AEW watching slot.
So
I
was like,
I mean, this is a match I'm very excited for. And I looked at the card and I was like, so hang on, they're doing Pete Dunne versus Kushida into the gauntlet into Wota versus Ciampa. And I was like, oh, okay, that's quite a good card.
Yeah, it's not bad. Right, so what's a great match from Kushida and Dunne into the gauntlet eliminator, which was on night one, to then finally get into night two to face Johnny. What do you make of this particular match? Obviously, it started hot with Leon Ruff and Swerve attacking Ruff and, you know, going straight into it. I didn't realise, I thought it would have been the Gauntlet Eliminator. I didn't realise it was like a timed one. I thought it was like pin and then the next person comes down. But there was obviously some sort of timing going on, which obviously in wrestling is just like, just throw them out now. It's like, there was no mark, like, it'll be 5 minutes to each compare. It was just like, oh, here comes the next.
Night bit was really good. Like, he came out and he cut his crap on all the fans and stuff. And I thought his, like, elimination was fantastic as well, and the way that he, like, then essentially everyone got in him after he helped Loomis, after he got Loomis eliminated. So...
Yeah,
it was good storytelling in that match. I mean, you could argue that maybe needed more time, but again, when you're on a two-hour, two-night TV special, you're very limited.
Well, yeah, that's what I think. I wonder if it wasn't on TV, if they'd have just had it as a normal gauntlet match, because obviously that would have took an hour up of the show. So yeah, maybe when you're on a two-hour show, it's no ideal. But I thought the only bit that, you know, personally, I was like, the Dexter Loomis elimination was a wee bit cheap, but I get it. The annoyance is they're not continuing that story, as far as I can see, on NXT. He's in a eight-person a mixed tag match, The Way, against Bronson Reed, Dexter Loomis, and Shotzi and Ember Moon, which I was like, but I guess we might see LA Knight. But it's just the way that story went. I was like, oh, I guess if they're going to continue down that path. If it wasn't a Dexter Loomis, I did say Bronson Reed was the next person that I wanted to see win it. So I thought that was a good call. I think they really elevated him, but we'll get into where that went in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I was surprised. LA Knight, I thought, was brilliant again. That suplex, I don't know if you said, it was a thing of beauty, the superplex from the top rope. It was absolutely beautiful. I've never seen it executed as well as that. But he's going to be a real, real contender over the next year for NXT. You know, he's great on the mic, as we all know, great in the ring, and, you know, be interested to see where he goes in terms of title pictures and what have you. But yeah, real star. Surprised that, I mean, we all kind of called Loomis last week on the show. Surprised that it was Bronson Reed that went over.
If it wasn't Loomis, I thought it was going to be Bronson Reed, because you know, the dynamic of Johnny Gargano.
It could be one of the faces.
Cameron Grimes, I think, has got like North American champion written all over him, but against Johnny Gargano, you kind of need Gargano to be the face there, and he's not. So I thought Bronson Reed, if it wasn't going to be Loomis, Bronson Reed's a great shout, and I worked out well.
I mean, would you be willing to accept a big wad of cash straight out of his crotch? That's the real question when it comes to Cameron Grimes. I mean, I think that we'd all cave in the right moment and we'd be like, yeah, I'll take your sweaty crotch cash. Thank you very much.
I thought, shout out to Swerve in that match, like, because he was obviously the Iron Man in that match, and I thought he performed really, really well. And again, it kind of shone a bit of a spotlight on him, because I think he's a very underrated talent.
He gets lost in that cruiserweight kind of mindset where you're like, oh, he's just there, he's a brilliant performer, but you almost put a ceiling on where he can go because he is like a cruiserweight. But I think he's brilliant. Like, I always say it, I Lucha Underground's my favourite show ever in terms of wrestling. And he was brilliant in that, and he was brilliant on the indies as Shane Strickland as well. And then it just feels like he needs the wee bit more personality shown on NXT. He does his podcast, he's got a brilliant personality in that, but you just don't quite get it in NXT, and he falls in that amazing ability. But where's he going to go? But I think that was a performance that people will be more excited to see him going forward.
Yeah,
I think with his heel persona as well, that was the first time it's really kind of had a good chance to shine through. And I think he was very much, you said, he was the Iron Man. And I think his story was probably the biggest story that ran throughout the entire match as well. So
yeah, I got another cracking match. Let's move on to the next one. Talking of cracking matches, this was like all we hoped for, I think. I don't know if you guys agree. Certainly, all the Meltzers and the likes of this world rated this as the best match of the
night. I really enjoyed good old Barrett getting really excited about the fact that the Ciampa was back in trunks and had shaved his head. Like, he was like, it's the Ciampa of old, we haven't seen him in trunks since. And I'm pretty sure he gave the exact event of when he was last had him in trunks.
I didn't like him in trunks. I prefer him in like his
camo shorts.
I prefer him in the kind of the combat trousers and stuff like that. But
I'm the same. I
thought it was
street fight attire.
Yeah, I think it was better than that.
And the slightly too large boots.
But I mean, Volta versus Ciampa is what we're talking about, and just Volta. He's just like, I don't know what it is, because, you know, in the modern day of wrestling, we're used to these big guys, you know, your Keith Lee's this world, your Bronson Reed's of this world, doing things that they shouldn't be able to. But Volta is just such a throwback to just wrestlers of the 80s and early 90s, and he doesn't do anything massive. It's power bombs, it's chops, it's big punches. He has the big splash off the top rope. But he doesn't do anything spectacular, but at the same time, he's just so fascinating to watch and just tells a brilliant story in the ring. I mean, and they told a great story here with, you know, this, you know, Ciampa disabling the right arm so he couldn't do the chops. I just thought it was a brilliant, you know, they talk about ring psychology, all the wrestlers, it's all about ring psychology, and I thought this was the kind of definition of that. What did you guys think?
I think, Walter, I always say it, where my favourite thing about him is it's similar to John Moxley. It's the things he doesn't do that make him special. He's very protected as a character. Doesn't really use social media. We don't really see much of him in terms of media or anything like that overall. We just see him turning up, beating people up and leaving. And it's just like, it's the most simple, effective thing ever. And, you know, obviously the respect he talks about for what he's got for professional wrestling. He is the kind of guy that is just naturally intimidating in terms of size, but I think his demeanour comes across as just an intimidating guy as well. And again, we spoke about people that you don't remember having a bad match. Walter, I know one of them was pre-recorded, but he had two amazing matches air on the network in the space of two nights, and absolutely amazing.
I was going to say, what was better, the Rampage Brown match or this?
Ciampa just edges it, but it's very close indeed. I just think
that, I thought, like, the Rampage Brown match was brilliant as well. I'm off this week, so I went and I thought, I'll watch NXT UK pre-load. I wanted to see Dar. I'm not a big fan of this Heritage Cup rule thing.
It was a brilliant match, but kind of convoluted rules wise.
But Volta versus Rampage, but I thought I need to see that match, and it was all it lived up that I thought it would be. So, no, cracking. Volta, I mean, you would love to see him on the main roster. You would love to see him on the main roster.
Would you trust them on the main roster, though?
No, I was going to say the Survivor Series.
Well, exactly. Mm. But do you trust the creative? Do you trust the writers to book the character correctly on the main roster? Your right, Alex, answer is no. So maybe he is better than just floating about that NXT one. But he's just brilliant.
There'll be another person who I'm sure we're about to talk about, who we're going to talk about 10 minutes, who might have lost the main event on night two, who you could make a similar argument for as well. So
yeah, we'll get to that one. Let's move on to the tag match, MSK versus Grizzly Young Veterans. Actually, before we get to that, where does Ciampa go from here? Obviously, Volta retains. I think it was obvious who was winning that match, because I don't think you could see Ciampa in NXT UK anytime soon. But where does Ciampa go from here now?
I have no idea. I keep saying it where he needs to go to Raw or SmackDown for me, because I think he is the kind of guy that would be used brilliantly on Raw or SmackDown. But I kind of get it. He said before he couldn't do the full schedule. What happens if he goes to Raw next week and then in 3 weeks it's like, right, we're back in front of fans and we're going to go on the road and we're going to do this and that. So I kind of get it. And it's weird because you look at him, obviously the hair and the beard, you go, he's the old veteran and he's just, he's just going to be putting people over. He's had his big run as NXT champion. He's nowhere near done. That's the annoying part. You're like, the guy's got hundreds of time. But I have no idea. I think I would love to see him repackaged ever so slightly back to what he was when he had no music. But I guess you need the crowds booing him for that to be a thing, and you need him to be the big heel. But I'd quite like him to go back to that. But then you kind of run the risk of what do you do with him then?
Need the old woman at the side of the ring, mate. That gimmick would not have worked without that one NXT fan who was there every week, the old lady.
The old lady.
And like every week he was just giving Flip another bird. That was what made that gimmick. Without that, wouldn't have worked.
One thing I'd maybe like to see, and it would have been more obvious if, you might have to split up the faction he's currently in, but I'd love to see heel DIY against MSK. But again, you'd probably need to. There's a lot of parts that need to move for that to be a thing.
Yeah, I just don't know where he's going to go next, and on the roster. But talking of tag teams, let's move on to that tag team match: MSK versus Grizzly Young Veterans versus Legado del Fantasma. This again, just NXT do tag matches really, really well. The main roster, Not so much, because they don't even have tag matches, really, or tag teams. But I thought this, as a three-way tag match, I thought was really, really good. What do you guys think?
I was just going to say, I think it was the kind of match that we were all expecting to be terrific, and it was terrific. For me, the only thing that ruined it was MSK on the mic on night two. Which kind of they were just so good in the ring, and the next day was just like the most drab, bland, lack of personality promo. I felt kind of quite bad that that was how they presented them afterwards. But
it's annoying because I think I kind of see it as the way they were in Impact. They were brilliant on the mic because they were never really in a backstage interview segment. It was always the treehouse. But I just think that they might need that wee one thing. Maybe even a manager. I wouldn't mind seeing them with a manager.
I think they just need to decide what their personality would be. I think that's maybe
it. I'm a bit too happy to be here. That's the thing that I never really like that. But I thought the match was brilliant. We wrote off Legado del Fantasma quite quickly last week, but they played their part really well. It's annoying because we did think, it's going to be either MSK or Grizzled Young Veterans. I thought it worked as a triple threat, but I did think the story of MSK and Grizzled Young Veterans went through it nicely, and I think that's probably where we're going to go in the future as well.
Yeah, surprised that Grizzled Young Veterans didn't win and the MSK were in the chase, but Grizzled Young Veterans in the chase for it. I mean, because you give me more of MSK versus Grizzled Young Veterans, because it's that two different styles and they just seem to work so well off that. But like you say, Legado del Fantasma really shone through. This is the best I think you'd seen them, and there were some spectacular moves in it. And there was the spot when MSK stopped them tapping out and stuff like that. That was a great spot. Loved that. But obviously MSK go on and they will be a team for the, like a high-flying team. We've not seen many of those, you know, like kind of rocker style teams in the WWE. Love to see them against the Bucks. I think that would be a spectacular match, you know, if you're talking about crossover matches. So, yeah, MSK Tag Team Champions. And then we moved on to the main event, Io Shirai versus Raquel Gonzalez. Wow, good match again. What did you make of this one, guys?
I feel really bad for saying this, but I think it was the worst match in the card. That was the thing. Like, it's. I mean, I get that this should have always been the main event of night two, but it was just such a strong undercard that I think.
Yeah, I think. I get that. I think in any other card, because the matches underneath it were also good. I mean, it was a fantastic night of wrestling. This was still a great match, don't get me wrong, but you know what you say, Alex, it probably suffered due to the quality of the matches below it.
And I think having the big MSK win before that, you'd kind of hit your big high with MSK, and it's as if we all needed a dampener match before we were ready for this, and it was just back into it.
But, yeah.
I thought it was a brilliant match, but it was, just suffered by the quality of what was before it, and also possibly timing a little bit. Again, it's the kind of match that I wonder if it wasn't on TV, might it have overran ever so slightly. Did feel like it was a wee bit pushed together. But
well, if you think about it, normally a takeover card would be 2.5 hours, and if you're on TV in your 2 hour slot with adverts, you've only got, what, 1 hour 40? So this is probably 50 minutes shorter than your average takeover with as many matches. So
yeah.
Yep. I thought it was one of those ones where the result, I think we're all agreed the result was the right result to get to. So I guess the means to an end and all that, at least we get to see a new women's champion for the first time in almost a year.
I think Shirai pulled, I mean, she's so good in the ring, and she pulled Gonzalez through the match, I think. I mean, I still think Gonzalez is still maybe a little bit green. Maybe that's wrong. But, I mean, Shirai was absolutely brilliant in this match. You know,
I kind of don't understand if Gonzalez is meant to be a heel or a face now. It kind of felt like she did like a weird semi-face turn, because especially on night two when, you know, she was like all smiley and, you know, holding it up, and it just didn't feel like a heel had won the title.
Yeah.
I think that might be by design, because I think we might get Dakota Kai being upset.
Yeah.
Now, and well, then that's the story.
Yeah.
Dakota seemed to be really happy for her, seemed to be there, but I guess that's just called acting in wrestling.
we'll see how it plays out, but I think that's the case. But I kind of get what you mean by the, like, I wouldn't say she's green, but it's only because I hate like extreme words like that. But I think she has got a lot to learn. But I did that. Like, that was the one thing that, you know, on the call afterwards with Triple H and Shawn Michaels, and that was the one match I wanted to know about. Somebody asked about MSK, which was great, and they essentially just said that they didn't think there was any other option, because since MSK came in, they're like the missing puzzle piece. But I asked about Raquel and Io, and they did say, like, look at the journey that Raquel Gonzalez has been on in basically a year. Like, she's came from being such a rookie to being like a solid main event performer, and then Io Shirai, they just said, was like the best on the planet, which I'm not sure if I agree with that. That's a, you know, it's a high accolade, but she's definitely up there.
Do you think, I mean, is she going to appear in the main roster? That would be my question. Do they put her up onto the main roster now? Do you think she's done what she needs to do in NXT, NXT, and they'll move her onto the main roster?
I'm legitimately scared they just do Kabuki Warriors V2. Legitimately scared.
Annoyingly, I think it's like, more fool me again, you know, because I'll say this and it will only happen. But I think they've done stuff so well in terms of promos on NXT that I've got a bit of hope that they would continue that. And I do think they recognise her as just like a different talent. Like, Asuka's amazing in the ring. I'm not taking anything away from her, but Io Shirai, I think they just recognise as being one of the best performers. So they might try and do something different there. But it's an annoying one, because, you know, on the call, everybody was asking about that, who's going up to the main roster, and it's like, why is it when anybody loses, they should go to Raw or SmackDown? But I'm in that bracket where I think they should, because what does she do now? Like, anytime somebody has stayed in NXT that's lost the championship after a dominant run, it's like, oh, they should have just went, like, it's just wasting time now.
Like Tommaso Ciampa.
Yes, precisely, like Tommaso Ciampa.
You proved your point previously in the previous...
I did see NXT getting advertised the Tuesday nights, and EO does feature in the graphic for that. Yeah. So I think she's maybe going to be staying down there, but we will wait and see when it moves to Tuesday nights. Actually, it's on tonight, so excellent. Get to watch that tomorrow morning. Let's move on to night two, gents. I think it was going to be a lot to live up to that night one, because it was a properly good NXT, and obviously it won in the ratings against the AEW. Thank God for that, because it would have been pie on someone's face if it didn't.
And the point on that as well, that if you think how many people were watching on either Peacock or the network,
yes,
they wouldn't account ratings wise.
So. That's very true, very true. Night two, we had on the kickoff show. It was Breezango versus. I've not seen this match because I don't know where you can see this. I guess it's going to be on the network, but I watched off. I can't remember what I watched off. In fact, it wasn't on the network because I watched the full thing on the network, so I don't know where you see this match, but it was Breezango versus Drake Maverick and Killian Dain for number one contender spot. And it was Maverick and Dain that went over, which I guess they've been floundering, doing nothing despite the initial push. So I guess it's good to see them getting somewhere, because it just all went a bit, it's went really quiet on that. It started with this great build of this kind of odd couple, and it's all just kind of, they've not been on telly much, but it was good to see them obviously being the number one contenders. And it, you know, it took kind of comedy tag teams against each other. Did you see it, Gary or Alex?
Didn't see it at all. No. The only thing is that I'm excited for that. I think it was, I'm not sure if it was the right outcome, because I think both teams could have done this, but we mentioned MSK being amazing in the ring. They're not quite there promo-wise in NXT yet.
Yeah,
either of these two teams are the kind of team that will be able to pull a good story out of them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So, first match of the night was the ladder match for the NXT Cruiserweight Champion. It was champion versus champion, Escobar versus Jordan Devlin. This one for me didn't live up to my expectations. I don't know what you guys thought. I just thought it was a bit clunky. Alex.
I would thoroughly agree with you. I was very much looking forward to this, and I think it was just, it was quite disappointing in the end. But I guess it's that when your ladder match is set up by Shawn Michaels, you're just probably putting too much expectation into it, aren't you?
Yeah.
I agree, but I wasn't like, I love ladder matches, but there was just something about this one that I was like, I don't think it's going to be anywhere near like match of the night or match of the two nights contender, that just wasn't there for me. It was okay. Didn't hate it, you know. I'm not going to say, oh, that was a pure shite match, because it wasn't. It was just a wee bit disappointing.
You know what? Do you think it was because they were both heels? I mean, they were quite.
Aye, it's hard to root for somebody in a ladder match if you can't if you can't identify with them babyface style.
It's true, actually. I didn't think about it like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like at the end, but it was a lovely moment for Santos Escobar where he brought out his kid, but that's a face thing.
That's a big baby face.
That's a face thing. Don't bring out your kid for the title victory, you know, for goodness sake. Play the character, man. good. I mean, it just again establishes Legado del Fantasma and keeps their story going, and Santos Escobar probably needs the gold round him. Jordan Devlin probably has a lot further to go, and don't know where Santos Escobar or where that story will go next, but
they're going to put Balor and Devlin together. Both of them now don't have titles, and I've been saying it for weeks. They've wanted to do it for ages. And his twin.
We'll get to that in a minute. The Women's Tag Team Championships were next. Shotzi and Ember versus The Way. Probably, I think we'll agree, is probably the worst card, worst match over both nights.
Shotzi almost killing herself again.
Shotzi almost killing herself. Yeah. I mean, for God, that she does take a lot of risks. Shotzi, we all love Shotzi, but it was like, whoa, calm down, Hen, calm down.
But I don't know. I'm just not that big a fan of the Candice and Indy Hartwell tag team. I don't think it really works well.
No, I'm the same with Shotzi and Ember Moon, and I love both of them. But I'm just like, oh, there's just something about it that I don't get quite. So much. I just think I think I'm always the same with tag teams. If it's two massive personalities put into a tag team, I think all four of them are massive personalities, it's like a bit of a waste.
Yeah.
It's as if they shouldn't have this belt to force them to put these made up tag teams or anything like that. But here we are, get used to more of it.
Exactly. We'll get to more of that when we get into WrestleMania itself. But the eclipse is still the thing of beauty. It doesn't matter when it happens, it's still and it was the double eclipse, which was fantastic. So I still think Indy Hartwell, when we talk about, I mean, Raquel Gonzalez has come up leaps and bounds, like you say, Gary, but I still think she has a long way to go.
And the Hartwell, I think, I'm just going to check the age of her, but the thing that always makes me feel really old is that she says the people that are the people in the match that got her into wrestling was Bayley Sasha at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn.
What the hell?
What?
Jesus Christ.
24 years old. So,
oh, boy. Well,
how long ago was Sasha versus Bayley at TakeOver Brooklyn? Was that like 5 years ago?
I think five years ago. I know she was quite late when she got in it, but it was like she was 18 or 19 when she seen that, and I was like, for fuck's sake.
Right, okay then. So she's got a lot of miles to left going the clock, so we'll let her off. Definitely the worst match, I would say, over the two nights. Next night, surprising result in this one. Johnny Gargano going over Bronson Reed for the North American Championship.
I mean, it wasn't overly clean. So, I mean, there was a little bit of heel shenanigans. So that was at least something that did redeem Bronson slightly. And maybe it's to prolong the rivalry. Maybe they didn't want to do North American Championship handover into an NXT title handover.
I thought this was the best Bronson Reed's looked. I thought Johnny Gargano can pull out anyone through a match because he's so good in the ring. I get a lot of people just sick and fed up of Johnny Gargano now in NXT. They've done the heel thing with him now, but it just feels that he needs somewhere new to go. He needs some new opponents. Cause it just feels that he's just getting stale there.
Now like Tommaso Ciampa.
Like Tommaso Ciampa.
It's like, I just feel like, and I think I'm stuck on it, but I feel like after their rivalry culminated, once I went to Raw, once I went to SmackDown, and then just play it for there, I love Gargano in terms of anytime I watch a Johnny Gargano match, it's one of the best matches you'll see that night, if not the best match you'll see that night.
Yeah.
But it's just, especially having the North American Championship on him, I just feel like it's non-necessary. He doesn't need the title doesn't need him. I feel like it should have went to Bronson Reed or anyone that won the gauntlet match. But again, this was I got a wee question in after the main event to Triple H and Shawn Michaels, and I asked about producing matches, because I know Pete Dunne does a lot of that and done a lot of it in NXT UK. They said that Johnny Gargano does a lot of producing matches in NXT and a lot of mentoring young talent, so I'm not sure if that's maybe a thing where maybe that's a hindrance to him going to the main roster, because they're like, well, even off screen, maybe just provides so much in NXT that you can't let go of him.
Is there also now not the Finn Balor / NXT is a third brand argument? And did Gargano and Ciampa not like describe themselves as NXT lifers?
Yes, and I think that's a phrase that might come back to haunt them in the future. But I remember that exact phrase.
I was surprised, you know, obviously you expect when someone gets through a gauntlet match and then goes on to night two, you expect that person to come out champion, especially when it's obviously a talent with a like Reed who they've kind of got invested for the future of the brand. I was very surprised that it was Gargano.
I think it's the stack, double stack booking. It's having the NXT North American match right before the NXT title change. They didn't want to do both of them just after quick succession.
I guess so. We'll see what happens within North America. I think he'll get a rematch, because he'll pull out the two-night thing and face it one-on-one. So we'll see what happens with that in the future. And that led on to the main event, Finn Balor versus Karrion Kross.
It wasn't the main event.
It wasn't the main event.
It was because the unsanctioned on the show. It was unsanctioned.
So technically, the main event.
Technically, wasn't sanctioned. Technically, wasn't there.
The joint main event, you know, the co-main event. It was Balor versus Karrion Kross, with Karrion Kross, I think, predictably, everyone called it that Karrion Kross would regain the title on there, but still, a good match.
It was a good match. It was awfully short. It felt like they took
You're not. I don't think you're a particular fan of Karrion Kross, are you, Gary?
I like the character, and I quite like his style in the ring. I think, you know, I like that everything looks like it hurts. there's just something about his matches that I just find quite boring. Like Alex said, this one was short, and it was a wee bit too short, but I always feel like if it went longer, would I be bored? And I think I might be. But I really,
for me, this was the perfect Karrion Kross match, essentially. Slightly too short, but just long enough.
I like him, and I do think there's more mileage in him beating Finn Balor. I don't beat Karrion Kross yet, and maybe even bring the Demon back and beat. You know, because we did see the big cross on where Finn Balor had his injury, a wee bit of paint back. But it's just, for me, this was, if it wasn't for Shotzi, Ember Moon versus The Way, this would have been my least favourite match of the night.
Right, okay. Who, the title's now on Karrion Kross, who's the next contender to step up for him? Because I think he'll go on a run where he'll just beat everyone. I can't see him. I can't see anyone on the roster that is able. It's like Brock Lesnar. It is what I would put down to Brock Lesnar of NXT. It will take someone, you know, I don't know who it would take to beat him.
Well, who's their next kind of up and coming faces?
It's either got to be the Demon Finn Balor, I think, or it's, you know, they're not going to even give Dexter Lumis that kind of push, I don't think. I think it'd either need to be the Demon Finn Balor or either somebody coming down or somebody joining.
Kyle O'Reilly?
I'm not sure.
He's like the next kind of baby face.
Yeah, but you just can't really see him. Actually. You can't see him beating. No, I can't see anyone. The only person I could see as hard as or being able to even step in the ring with Karrion Kross, like legitimately, would be Bronson Reed.
That's Timothy Thatcher. What's he
Timothy
doing
Thatcher's a good shout. Timothy
or Walter.
I don't think Thatcher's really done Walter. Enough to warrant an NXT.
Walter Karrion Kross. Can you imagine that match? Oh!
Then you could potentially destroy Walter. And then you have to either have Walter, have Karrion Kross win both belts, or have Walter drop the UK belt before he fights Kross.
Let him relinquish it.
Devalues
Walter. Yeah, it's NXT UK.
It's difficult.
No, I think I can answer that question for NXT UK because I think I'm pretty sure that Walter is going to be dethroned by Ilya Dragunov, because if you look at where their match went and then Ilya disappearing and the storyline they're building with him now, I think he's definitely going to win that. So I was going to say have Walter relinquish, but, and again, that defeat the purpose because you don't want to be relinquished and it's like, well, NXT UK is shite because the one guy that dominated it just can't be beat.
Yeah, that's true. Did Timothy Thatcher, you mentioned there, surprising he wasn't involved in Shanigans in the Ciampa match. I was very surprised at that with Walt.
Maybe saving it for TV, but I just don't know what's happened to him. He seems like he's just disappeared a wee bit.
Now you've mentioned it, how about, do you think they do Bronson versus Johnny Gargano 2 on NXT tonight and Bronson wins the title?
Tuesday night.
That's maybe what's happened.
Very good shout, Alex.
Gary's shout, I just kind of ripped it off.
Oh, no, wait. So that's not happening because they're already competing on a tag team match.
Oh, yeah, of course, because we said Bronson Reed and
Maybe next week.
Then we moved on to the main event, the unsanctioned match between Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. Again, I don't think it's lived up to the expectations that I hoped it would be. I don't know what you guys thought.
Too long, way too long.
Yeah.
A good
like
match.
40 minutes, 45 minutes?
I ribbed myself with this one because, you know, with the conference calls, it's like, call, don't know why, 8 to 13 minutes before the call scheduled to start. So that's the official thing. And with these, it is, you know, when the main event ends, the call starts, or a wee bit in between. So I called right as the entrance is finished. And I was like, I'm probably going to be a wee bit long. You know, it's probably going to be like a 25-minute match.
40 minutes and 19 seconds. I've just looked it up.
Aye, more for me. I was on that media call for an hour before it got started. And then a further hour once it was on.
Just to put this into context, that match was twice as long as Reigns versus Edge versus Bryan. Twice as long as the main WrestleMania.
Way, 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 way too long. And I loved, like, a few of the spots with the chain were incredible. Some of them were unnecessary and just didn't make sense. I liked the stage bit, but there was a big no sell in that kind of ruined it for me as well. Yeah. It was just a bit, it was one of these typical NXT hardcore matches where it's like, you know exactly how it's going to go. It's going to be ridiculously long and it's going to have some brilliant spots in it and be really entertaining, but they're going to take the piss and just have the longest match they possibly can.
There was a lot of kickouts.
Aye, Aye.
I think they need to keep, I think a lot of people have been complaining about that style. Well, not complaining, but bringing it up for a while. And instead of, you know, trying to, you know, do something a bit different, they just seem to have doubled down on it, haven't they? They're like, well, yes. If you like false finishes, we're going to do you a 40-minute match when 30 minutes is literally just going to be false finishes. So
yeah,
it's the one thing that I think might be exciting about Karrion Kross being champion, because that might change in main events going forward.
True. That is very true. To be fair, looking at Meltzer's rating, he gave that match of the night 4.5 stars. He gave it. But there you are. Again, the bit I found really comedy about it, unsanctioned match, right? So they had the security guards coming down at the start and they had them spotting the ring. But then it was like they were coming down and he could easily have attacked, because he was on one side of the ring. He could easily have just got out and attacked him because they were...
It's unsanctioned. Why are they letting the security guards get involved? I don't think the security guards would have insurance for that if it's not been sanctioned by the company. So that's very irresponsible.
The one thing I liked was that the referee wore a black T-shirt and they changed the ropes to black as well. But then at the same time, you're like, surely if anything, you just remove the ropes. If you like, surely you're halfway through tearing down the ring and then the unsanctioned match happens. Like, why would you be like, we don't sanction this match, but we're going to give it special presentation and change.
And
the
we're
going to
give it
ropes.
A referee as well.
Can the next unsanctioned match, can we just have the ring crew slowly dissembling the ring around them and they keep doing moves onto what they're trying to take away? And they're like, for fuck's sake, we're just trying to do our job, guys.
Have it in Raw Underground.
Where does Adam Cole? Does he go to the main roster?
Main roster.
What the fuck else does Adam Cole do now?
Adam Cole's the big disappointment, however, of the night is the Undisputed Era theme seems like it's no more, because Adam Cole came out to, they all came out to new music. Pete Dunne actually came out to new music as well. The Bruiserweight, I fucking love the Pete Dunne theme as well.
He's no longer the Bruiserweight though. He doesn't have the weight to be the Bruiserweight. Yeah. And if you notice, he stopped wearing the bear so much. So he's just got the bear on his knee.
He's still got it on his knee. Yeah, I was going to say.
It's permanent on his knee.
Pad.
He changed his music. Adam Cole came out to new music.
But Adam Cole came out to new music that was as similar as fucking possible to the Undisputed Era's music, really, wasn't it?
I didn't like the Adam Cole one. That was one where I said I was on the media call on Twitter and everybody was saying, ask about Adam Cole's new music. It's shite.
It is shite. So Kyle O'Reilly's was all right, actually.
I quite liked it.
It was okay, but that's a big disappointment. The Undisputed Era music seems like it's been put to bed now. Shite. Fucking love that.
They can't afford it.
They can't afford it. I know. So that was Adam Cole Adam Cole SmackDown.
I still think they're going to go with Mary Undisputed Era. I think they're going to bring them back and do more of a storyline with that. But I think they will bring back.
They've still got a long way to go. Bobby Fish isn't involved, and they can still push that and do a Civil War type.
I don't think. I think Gary's right. They're not. They're going to milk this. Right. Think about how many times we've seen Ciampa versus Gargano.
Yeah, do you know what? You're right. They'll bring back. They'll still. There's a lot to go in on this. Disputed Era Civil War type scenario. So yeah, you're right, you're absolutely right. Wow, so that was NXT TakeOver, and that was Wednesday, Thursday. Let's briefly touch on SmackDown from the Friday night, because it was just basically a warm-up for WrestleMania. This was the kickoff show for WrestleMania. Three amazing promos on that night. Alex, did you manage to catch them?
I didn't, but I caught the promos, yeah. So, like, I love the way they were all done in a totally different style. You had Psychopathic Edge very much come back, and you've got Daniel Bryan, you know, the heartwarming kind of character that he is just now. And then you've just got Roman. What do? I show up and I win.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. You know, we had a few matches on it. It was more focused around the main event and shining the spotlight on Edge, Reigns, and Daniel Bryan. Big J. Jey Uso, main event, won the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. That was
Called it. Wasn't a surprise to me, John.
Was it a surprise for you, Gary? Of course not.
It was the right call as well. Like, I think it's at the end of the day that Andre the Memorial Giant Battle Royal is actually quite a throwaway thing. And I actually feel like Jey Uso actually winning it made it feel more important because he won it and he's involved in like a main event storyline.
And yeah. It at least gives him, I don't want to be that guy. Jey Uso might never win a world championship. It at least gives him an accolade because, you know, when Jimmy comes back, he'll probably be back in a tag team. And even though I think he could easily be like Intercontinental or US champion and be a really good one, at least it gives him a singles accolade, if not.
Is that not then like this main event juice, or not like the most kind of, what's the word, the backhanded compliment of a nickname in history of wrestling in that case then?
Aye, probably.
Poor guy. Poor guy.
Yeah. The tag team match, or the SmackDown tag team titles, surprised that it was Ziggler and Rude retaining. I thought they might have given it to Ray and Dominic.
Oh, it's just time to get it off. I really like Ziggler and Rude, but it's just time to get it off them as well, because there's nothing's happening. With, like, I know the tag team division, I don't think you could put it on anybody and it's going to be the most exciting thing ever. But I think just it's time for a change. Street Profits, you know, they carried the division when it was shite on Raw and even a bit on SmackDown. So they'd have been a good call, but aye, the Mysterios, it'd have been a nice moment.
Well, if you think about it, like how far is, I mean, this sounds a bit harsh, but how far is Dominic, how many steps backwards has Dominic taken since last year's WrestleMania? Just in terms of, you know, its position on the card. I mean, obviously he's like improved in so many ways, but like this is just what they've done after a year of developing. This is where he come to. He's on the fucking pre-show in the SmackDown tag team title match.
Yeah. So it was a warm-up really to WrestleMania SmackDown. It told the story going into WrestleMania. We had a bit of Sami Zayn hijinks as well in there. Sasha Banks talking up the match with Bianca. And before I go on to WrestleMania, I meant to get your match of the night from Stand and Deliver.
First night, Ciampa Walter, definitely.
Ciampa Walter.
Second night, I mean, I'd probably would, even though I buried it a wee bit, I'd probably still say the unsanctioned match. That probably just narrows it, the Bronson Reed Gargano match for me. I really liked that match, but I mean, the unsanctioned match still kept my attention.
We kind of got to agree with the unsanctioned match. As much as we're being bitches about it, it was still quite a good match. Although I did slightly enjoy the ladder match, but I think I was probably just trying to enjoy the ladder match more than anything else. And you can't really disagree with Walter versus Ciampa, really, can you?
Okay then. Right, okay. So that was SmackDown. Let's get to the main event of the weekend, or of the week. WrestleMania Night 1.
And we opened with a bang. 40 minutes of bang, some would say.
Oh my word, didn't it just? So we go into the first, you know, we come to WrestleMania. There's Vince outside with every single superstar on the roster, on the stage, welcoming back the fans. And then a minute later, this chaos. We were watching it on the watch along, so we're like, what the hell is going on here? And then suddenly you realise when you saw Samoa Joe and Michael Cole in ponchos that, yep, it's been delayed by 30 minutes.
Well, see, this is my take on that, right? You've been running open-air stadium shows for how many years? And yet you have never at any point created a backup rain plan. Then my opinion is you're fucking lucky this is the first time you've had a palaver like this. So, like, I mean, for goodness sake. And when did they get the weather reports? Like,
I know, unbelievably. The first night with crowds back and everyone's going, oh my God, is this going to go ahead? Luckily for us, it did. But I need to go back and watch it because we were all doing it on the watch along. So the sound was down and everyone was talking. But did you see the promos, Gary? Because obviously it was like, oh shit, we need to fill time. Get everyone out to do promos. Talk us through the promos. Who was good and who was bad at the unscripted promos?
I loved it. I thought it was absolutely brilliant because, you know, how often have we spoken about, you know, how scripted promos are and the fact that they just didn't have time. Like, there's no way you can script promo. Like, I guess for the people that are later on, but it was very impromptu. The best part for me, like, they went to backstage and they had Drew McIntyre, and you could tell he was a wee bit flustered because he did tremble a wee bit, stuttered kind of a wee bit as well. And it was like, this could be the big expose, and it could make an arse of the whole event if you're going to interview people like this. He gathered his composure so well. He had he confronted Bobby Lashley, who was getting interviewed, gathered his composure so well, and then even had the professionalism. Kayla Braxton was like, Sarah Schreiber, I think it was standing the wrong side. And he was like, sorry, you need to stand that side because I'm not turning my back on Lashley. And I was like, that's perfect because it's a television cue that he has to stand on that side, but he's actually made it actually make sense. That was great. The best one was Kevin Owens. He just cut a brilliant promo. Direct to camera, absolutely amazing. The New Day, even they done a brilliant one where they were doing a full interview And it was the two of them, amazing full interview, and then Big E just randomly creeped up from behind the interviewer like about 5 minutes into it. But it was really good. But the highlight was obviously seeing Michael Cole and Samoa Joe in a poncho.
So we got into the matches eventually after the half hour debate, and it was no surprise it was Bobby Lashley and Drew coming out first for the championship match. Perhaps a bigger surprise that Bobby retained, but was that
wasn't
the right
surprising,
move?
No. Wasn't surprising at all.
Do you not think it was surprising that everyone had Drew going away with it?
I thought because it was opening that Drew would win, because I thought they were going to do first match back pop. In, massive pop.
I don't think they'd have put the title on Bobby to lose it 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
That would have been such a waste. You'd have just left it. If you wanted a big pop from Drew, why would you take it off The Miz?
Yeah, we did talk. Obviously, the opening was Hogan and Titus O'Neil.
Titus was terrific. Titus was hilarious.
Hogan got booed, and they put in fake crowd noise to cover the boos.
They did the second night,
I
think they just accepted defeat on that one. Tried a pirate costume, that didn't work. But no, Titus was great. I think as well, how difficult must that, I mean, obviously difficult for Hogan as well, but how difficult must that be if you're Titus put in that situation and the guy you're with is getting booed and you know why he's getting booed and you have a direct relation to why the reason is that he's getting booed. I think Titus done tremendously. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And I just think it's a difficult position anyway, because we don't want to see the hosts. Like, no. Do we give a fuck what they're saying? We want the matches to start. So it is just a difficult thing to do anyway.
I did like what they did with Bayley in the end. I liked that Bayley very much got multiple WrestleMania moments. And I liked the way that was what spurned her throughout the night. So there was some positives to the host this year.
There was. But we had Bobby obviously going over Drew. You guys weren't surprised. I guess it's not a surprise. They don't want to kind of flip-flop the belt so much, but you just thought Drew would have got that moment. I guess there's...
He doesn't have to have it now. Do you know what the funny thing is? That if when they have crowds back, they will have more opportunities.
Yeah, so SummerSlam maybe. SummerSlam maybe.
But it doesn't need to be that fast. Just you all calm down, right? You've had too much Drew McIntyre as WWE champion over the past year that you're getting like Drew Mac champ withdrawal syndrome every time he drops the belt. You're like, when's he getting it back, boys? When's he getting it back? He can not have it for 6 months to a year.
I was hoping we wouldn't see him on Raw, because I actually really want him to go to SmackDown and be the Roman Reigns, the guy that beats Roman Reigns.
That's a possibility as well, but... Yeah, it was a good, great opening match to the pay-per-view. Then we moved into the Women's Tag Team Championship number one contenders match. Poor old Mandy Rose slipping on the ramp on the way down.
And on her defence, it was fucking wet. So,
it was fucking wet.
And she styled it out really well as well. I think that's like, you know, we've all been there. No, not at WrestleMania, obviously, but we've all been there. We've all fell in with arse and felt like the most embarrassed person on the planet. She styled it really well.
I think her and Mandy's new outfits as well, there was a couple of almost wardrobe malfunctions as well. So I think the combination of the fall with the new tights was bad.
Not almost is all I will say on that. Dana Brooke addressed hers directly on Twitter. Done it brilliantly as well. She's like a lot of people saying it, and she even said, you can call us nip slips, at least we look good doing it. I tell you, WrestleMania week, the two most read articles that I have written were about Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke. So
what
there you go.
Gary, I know you're a big Riot Squad, Mark. They obviously didn't go over. Instead, it was the Tamina and Natty that went over. Instead,
Riot Squad looked good. I think they were probably the, apart from they could have got two eliminations, did they not? They did pretty well.
Yeah, I actually thought it was, it would have been the right decision, because I think they made the Riot Squad look strong in losing that match.
Yeah.
But it would have been the right decision if Natalya and Tamina won the tag team titles the next night.
Well, we'll get on to that, but we see night one, that's probably the way we thought it was going to go. I think we all agreed that it would be Tamina and Natty to go over. We'll get into night two. Let's move on to the next match. Cesaro versus Rollins. Match of the night, potentially?
Very close, but not quite for me.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But very close, but it was a great... I mean... we expected it. It was just, it was the match we expected. It was just absolutely brilliant. Loved Cesaro's new gear. That's one thing I'll say. I thought it looked absolutely brilliant. I love that Seth Rollins new music. I just think it's the brilliant heel music. It was just great. A really enjoyable match. I'd love to see you in it, but I'm quite glad we've now got round to that point. Like, we've got the Cesaro face turn. He's now established. It felt like a big deal, especially the reaction of him after the match.
He totally bought into the win. He got the crowd totally popped for it as well. The UFO swing thing was incredible. The
helicopter.
It's getting called the UFO swing.
He calls it the UFO now because he doesn't use his arms.
Yeah, because
he's changed it because he doesn't use his arms.
Because
a helicopter that's got rotor blades on the UFO top. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, but a lot of flying things don't. Yeah, fair
the
enough.
The kite.
Fair enough.
The kite swing doesn't have the exact same ring to it. push to the main event now. Do we think this could be Roman Reigns' next competitor?
No, because he'll get killed by Roman. He's not the man to beat Roman. Don't put him against Roman until he's the man to beat Roman.
It's one of those tricky situations where I feel like it either has to be new into the title picture or they need to give him somebody big. Like, they need to... I don't know who the big heel is they can give him, though. That's the thing. Because Edge, maybe?
We'll get to that, but I think he's going a different way. Great match. On to the New Day versus AJ Styles and Omos. I have to say, this was really well put together, this match. The New Day wrestled as heels, as heels. They kept AJ away from the tag, and we got that moment, which... Gary, you've been waiting for so long. We've got the big tag to Omos. And Alex, you called it last week. We had the Styles Clash off the top of Omos.
You mean the phenomenal forearm off the top of Omos. If it was a Styles
Clash,
the phenomenal forearm off the top of Omos. Good shout, sir. Good shout. On the watch along, we all popped for the fact that Alex had called that correctly. Again, it's what we wanted to see. Was just everyone just wanted to see Omos in the ring, and we got what we wanted. And right decision to put the titles on Omos and AJ.
The New Day are going to win them again at some point in the future. Anyway, it's not. I like it for Omos, and it makes AJ Styles a Grand Slam champion as well, which is good. Just ticks at that box for him. He's Omos the big start while still having him alongside, you know, three big professionals that are going to be able to not carry him because he didn't really need carried, but guide him through the match. I thought it was amazing. You mentioned New Day wrestling as heels. I always say wrestling is brilliant when it makes sense. This made sense more that it didn't make sense because it was better that they had them do that. Xavier Woods saying we're cutting off the ring, getting lessons in professional wrestling throughout. The big, the hot tag was... It would have been disappointing if we didn't get the Omos hot tag. It was great. And my favourite thing is that Omos calls his new fans Omos Sapiens. that's absolutely amazing. He was cutting cameos over the weekend and he was addressing everyone as Omos Sapiens.
I love that.
So I thought that was great. But I know it was amazing. The only disappointment is what we'll get into. It wasn't on Raw.
right. Okay.
Well, we also got Big E calling it, announcing the New Day for the first time in a long time.
That was nice.
I mean, this is the downside because we're about to talk about it in a minute, but I don't think Omos was the best debutante of the night.
Let's get into the next match. And Alex, you called this as the sleeper hit of WrestleMania last week, the one that we unexpectedly thought would be quite good. We all thought it was going to be the worst match on the card. It wasn't to be the case. Shane McMahon versus Braun Strowman was a good cage match.
It was good banter, wasn't it? It was decent. I mean, like, I'm glad. I think that's the thing. Like, did I not say here last week and say, why do they keep putting Shane McMahon on WrestleMania? Well, the reason, Alex, is that apparently Shane McMahon does a fucking good match every year at WrestleMania. That's why they put him on the card.
They'll be changing his name to Mr. WrestleMania soon as well as the best in the world. That's it. But I think
The build-up was absolutely atrocious. So it actually went well above the expectations of the build-up.
I've never been more happy to be wrong as well about the ending. I was certain that, you know, Shane McMahon was going to lose because Braun Strowman was stupid and kicked him off. Shane was going to win because Braun Strowman was stupid and kicked him off the cage. So I'm so glad they didn't go with that angle and they actually just gave us a good cage match.
You know what my big complaint is? They've done the same thing to the WWE cages they do to the NXT cages. There's little platforms in all the little corners before they do the stuff. And it's really annoying me. Like, just totally destroys the sense of disbelief.
At least Shane actually used one of the bits, though, and smashed Braun Strowman over the head with.
Yeah,
I was like, where the fuck did they get that? And I was like, oh, wait, it's a wee platform.
Also, the fucking the janitor who's left his toolbox hanging next to the cage getting fucking fired in the morning, I'll tell you that.
I know.
Can't get the bloody staff these days. I mean, health and safety.
Again, they're ripping up. They've kind of calmed their jets. When Braun Strowman was all doing all these mad things like pulling down scaffolding, the ripping of the cage was a great spot, and pulling him back in with I thought was a great spot. So surprisingly, all right, it was all right. Then we moved into we're alluding to this, Alex, presumably debutant of the night. We had Miz and John Morrison versus Damian Priest and Bad Bunny, and holy fuck.
It started from his entrance, didn't it? The minute he rocked in that fucking massive truck. I mean, I'm assuming that's his thing. I always don't know very much about Bad Bunny. But
I don't know much about Bad Bunny either.
But from the way he came in from the start, to the way he wrestled the match, from the way he took the win, I thought everything about him was a class act. And I even really liked the little bit with the advert for his tour with Triple H the night before, when Trips gives him like the Triple H microphone. He's like, what was it he said? He said, like, you've done your stuff here, now we've got to let you go be here, something like that. And
yeah, you go do what you do.
That's what it was.
I thought it was absolutely amazing. I've mentioned that every week on Raw. I think he's been one of the highlights of Raw this year, which it sounds insane to say that. He's just came in, hurdles of respect for the business. Seemed like all he wanted to do was do a good job and earn respect. And I think he has earned a lot of respect for, you know, the wrestlers have been vocal about it, but for the fans as well. Absolutely amazing. A lot of credit to Miz and John Morrison as well. I think they done a great job with him, especially Morrison, that Canadian destroyer on the outside. Absolutely incredible. That was like one of the spots of the weekend for me. That just blew me away.
Incredible. He sold so well. You know, we're talking about his offense here, but he sold so well for, and I mean, like you say, Morrison and Miz did really well for him as well. But brilliant, absolutely great. And, you know, the right match, we knew it was going to end him taking the win as well. And just phenomenal. Who's better though, Bad Bunny or Pat McAfee?
Bad Bunny.
Yeah, like, because Pat's all about these, like, kind of big kind of flurries of high spots and, like, his big kind of moment. Well, Bad Bunny was just consistently good.
And also, I mean, Pat McAfee, I feel like this, it's a bit cheap on Pat McAfee, but he's definitely got an advantage with the athletic background. Bad Bunny's a singer. To be able to get away with being that athletic, going through that kind of match with it just blowing up is absolutely unreal for somebody that's no used to that.
And he's not overly big Bad Bunny, I wouldn't say. Like, Pat McAfee, you know, I think he's got a bit more beef and size to him as well.
Let's get a match. Pat versus Bad Bunny. It's got to happen. Next WrestleMania, call it now like they did with Rock and Cena.
It's not that. But my first thought was, who's getting Meltzer's Rookie of the Year if it's not Bad Bunny? Needs to be him. And I don't remember the last time that I watched a celebrity wrestle, apart from Pat McAfee probably, and went, I really want to see them wrestle again.
Stephen Amell.
Stephen Amell was incredible as well, but he would be the last one.
Yeah, but that, honestly, MVP of the night, incredible. And then the main event, Sasha versus Bianca, just the emotion on both of their faces before that bit, especially Bianca.
One bad thing, Bianca gave away the finish. Gave away the finish by being too happy. Like, you know, you could tell in Bianca's face that she
I'm winning this
that
title
that.
Tonight. Yeah,
I don't know because I still think that, like, the magnitude of the occasion. I'm like, I think even if you're losing that match, you would still be emotional. So I'm choosing to believe that.
I think you could see it in Sasha's face as well, though, and then of course there's the picture of Sasha on the floor smiling for
it
that
was almost
match
like,
as well. So.
It was almost like Sasha wanted to get over there and give her a big cuddle at the start. You could see that look in her in Sasha's face, like, it's all right, it's fine. But, you know, it was incredible to see that emotion. But honest to God, Bianca was, this was, I guess this is match of the night, wasn't it? I mean, the spot, that spot where she military pressed
the garage press,
up the stairs. Oh, unbelievable.
That and the hair whip, which you could see even a couple of days later, there was a photo of Sasha, I don't know where she was, wearing like a sports bra where her side was exposed and you could still see the mark. It was like, fucking hell, that was just hair. Like, how does it make that much of a mark? But no, I thought this was, you know, we've all been very, very vocal about how bad the build to this was, how it didn't need the Reginald stuff and it didn't need anything else. It just needed them to, you know, build to a wrestling match. So props to WWE for not putting Reginald in there for a start. That's the one thing that, you know, I'm so glad that didn't happen. Yeah. But, you know, means to an end, all the bad build didn't matter because what we got was, you know, one of the best WrestleMania main events in years, I think. I thought it was like, I would go that far as to say, definitely match of the night, arguably up there for match of the week, and just absolutely brilliant.
Is it better is it better than Becky versus Charlotte versus Ronda?
Yes.
I'm unsure about the end moment. The end moment, I think, of the Becky one was that, you know, I love that visual with the two belts. But the Bianca one is, it's definitely equal, but the match was 100, you know, maybe even 100 times better, I was going to say there. I think it probably, amazing.
Yeah, incredible. And the thing is, it establishes Bianca as a star now, because I think they've not went into identifying her characters, and she's come up from NXT. They've really not. She's like, Grado was messaging me saying, "It's the first WrestleMania. I don't even know who this woman is in the main event." It does.
I think they've done the odd wee tiny good thing. Like, I love the one that I always go back to was that obstacle course with Bailey.
Yeah, with Bailey,
and she lifted Otis on her shoulders. Like the wee bits like that. But I think they've been smart about it. Where they've apart from being, she's been pinned in tag team matches, I guess. But they've made her look brilliant. And even looking back at the Royal Rumble, when she won over Ripley, it was like, both of them got their WrestleMania moments. So, yep. Absolutely amazing.
No, that was the funny thing. I was convinced it was only going to be one, but no, both of them got it. So
absolutely. So, well, we'll get on tonight to then incredible main event. Match of the night for that then, guys?
For night one, definitely Bianca,
definitely.
Sasha.
Definitely, yeah.
Cesaro and Seth is close, but couldn't it be anything
else? Didn't have the emotion.
And what was the low point? I'm going to go for Samoa Joe and a poncho.
Personally, I thought night one didn't really have a notable point. I thought it was well booked from start to finish. And it was a consistently good show. It was, personally.
Night two.
I was a little drunk, so I mean, that helped.
Yeah. Let's move on to night two. Have you got a low light, actually, Gary, before we move on?
I don't think so, because even the one that I would point to is because of what happened in night two. So I think night one overall, brilliant.
Yeah, great night. Night two then, the Sunday night.
Started badly, didn't it?
WrestleMania Hangover is what should have been called.
Yes, the WrestleMania Hangover. So, we talk about the match that has been one of the most talked about matches on the card, The Fiend versus Randy Orton. Where do you start?
Talk about those entrances first. Can we talk about the positives? Like, how good is Alexa Bliss in that character? I think Gary was saying it last week. Even in her entrance, you can see it with the face and with the expressions. And I mean, I like the idea of the box, and I can see why they used it, obviously, with the finish and stuff. But it was a little bit weird the way that they took a long time to show you it, if you know what I mean. And you were like, how long has Randy Orton been staring at this box? And then they cut to Randy, and Randy looks really surprised to see the box. And you're like, but you've been looking at this for the past 10 minutes.
The weirdest part for me, and I liked a lot about this. I know that I'm in the minority. I liked a lot about it. But the weirdest thing for me was the walking through the tunnel, and I get that it was just to show you the transformation. But where was the tunnel?
It wasn't even good. It wasn't even like good. Oh, they could see the little jump and stuff. It wasn't even a good overlay. They could have done it. Like, it could have done something cooler.
Why did they make the call to have him suddenly go back to the old Fiend, I wonder?
I think it would have been fucking impossible to wrestle in that burnt costume.
Right.
Plus as well, was it just me, or has he got a new Fiend mask? Because the nose is a little bit more pointed, and it looks like he's got more space around his eyes, and it's a bit more fitted, because he did look a little bit more mobile in the ring.
Yeah, I think it's probably only been redesigned to make it more comfortable to wrestle in. But it did look a lot better as well. But a lot of people were saying it looks too white, too clean. A lot of people saying it wasn't Bray Wyatt, which I thought was hilarious because you could see his tattoos and his fucking hair.
They just shoved Bo in there for the
That's
day.
Everybody was saying Bo Dallas, and I'm like, have you seen Bo Dallas and Bray Wyatt side by side? They look nothing alike despite being brothers. But I thought it was... You know, all the entrances were good, apart from that wee overlay thing that Alex mentioned, and the tunnel was a bit... But I loved it. The story, you know, the jack-in-the-box, it all played in nicely to the story. Yeah. I feel like if you condense this down to, like, 1-2-minute package, you get a good story. It's just had so many lowlights. Like, when it hits, it hits. When it doesn't hit, it is shit. Like, it is absolutely terrible. But the match was just bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. Oh, the end to the match, sorry.
The end to the match, yeah. I mean, it now appears that Alexa Bliss is in control of The Fiend. That looks obviously like it's the end of Randy Orton and The Fiend, which is good news, and we can move on. But where the fuck do they go with The Fiend character next? I don't know where they can go with it. I don't know what they can do with it. It's just overexposed.
A match with Alexa Bliss, I think, is the answer.
That's what they're doing. Like, I mean, how do we rebuild them back up? We make them feud with a female. That's terrific. Let's do that.
I'm annoyed at myself because, like, the end, like, I've liked a lot, but even the end, I was like, huh? Like, I loved everything until the kind of stare down, and then just they blacked it, and it was like, oh, okay, I guess we need to wait to find it. But annoyingly, it's like so good / bad. The thing I was most excited about ahead of Raw last night wasn't any of the new champions. It was, where do we go with this shite story? So I'm playing into the game.
Yeah.
So did they make her wear, Alexa Bliss, wear a crown that was seeping out black goo?
Yes.
I believe so. I am guessing that had, like, tubing around it.
And it was, like, stuck to the box, and it was all part of the... Yeah, I just stupid.
One thing is, a lot of people are, and I think they're reaching with this, but a lot of people are pointing at the way she was sitting, the pentagram and the black mass, Aleister Black. But I think that's a big reach. I would love it to happen, but I'm not convinced that it's that well.
So it's going to be a darker Aleister. That the potential theory is Aleister Black coming back as some sort, you know, the kind of character, and being with Alexa Bliss, and then it goes to The Fiend versus, right, okay, I can see
that's what people are thinking. I don't think it's that. I think they've thought out as much as they've went, right, Alexa Bliss has been holding this jack in the box, The Fiend is in control of her, and then it turns out The Fiend was inside the jack in the box all along. Fucking wrestling's mental, isn't it?
I mean, you can see, like, it's actually slightly clever storytelling if you prepare the story correctly so that it all makes sense, isn't it? But it feels like they've just taken a dot and they've been like, let's connect these dots and hope someone gives us credit for it.
And it would have also been, I think there's a way to make it work with it also, and I'm going to be that guy, and I hate being that guy, but I'm going to be that guy. There's a way to make it work with it pinning The Fiend again. And I hate being that guy.
Like, an RKO out of nowhere is pinned.
Yeah. The guy caught fire and managed to heal himself, and I guess it did take 6 months, but then he gets dropped to a fucking vintage Orton DDT and also an RKO. So it's bizarre. I don't get it, but I'm still going to watch every week to see
what the fuck they do with it next. Women's tag match was up after that mental thing, and it was Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler.
Just to bring the crowd back up, that's why it was in there.
Versus Tamina and Natalya.
This was okay compared to what we previously witnessed. So
yeah.
It was fine.
It was okay, it was fine.
Match was good. It ends baffling.
Why did they not give Tamina? Because the crowd were right behind Tamina and Natalya, let me tell you, especially when Tamina's doing this.
It was this really stupid ending, though, with, like, Natalya, like, missing the tag and stuff like that. It just made Natalya look really silly, trying to give, didn't work.
Like, this veteran of the ring doesn't realise that it's the wrong person that she was had in the submission. It just, yeah. I felt sorry for Natalya and Tamina. I thought they should have had the titles on them and given them their WrestleMania moment, because
they both deserve a WrestleMania moment. I know that, like, you know, Natalya's just been there forever, and she is, I'd say, one of the best technical wrestlers in terms of women of all time. Tamina, we don't see a lot of her. A lot of people like to make her, you know, the kind of butt of the joke, but she's loved backstage, absolutely loved backstage. And I think that in itself is like enough to give her a moment, because she's just never had a moment. I get all the, you know, it's difficult because of who her father was. And they do the tribute spot with the frog splash as well. But I just feel like it was the right time. And when are they ever going to have that moment again, or the opportunity to do that moment again, unless they redo it next year?
Unless she wins, I don't know, that one of them will win the Mae Young Battle Royale Classic at some point.
Aye, if that comes back next year, I guess. But I just felt like they set themselves up perfectly and then didn't pull the trigger.
No, very strange, very strange.
Yeah, it just felt like a bit of a damp squid over all that story, literally, didn't it?
Yeah.
And Nia and Shayna, I just don't get well. I don't understand.
I don't know where they go with it. I don't know where they go next.
No.
But you notice they had a joint team like entrance and stuff as well. Like they had both their names on the graphic and stuff. So maybe they're leaving them together for a while.
Yeah.
Maybe put some effort into it. So
nah.
Next match, one I was rooting forward to was Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn with Logan Paul at ringside for this match. And it went the way we thought a Kevin Owens-Sami Zayn match would go. Good match. Didn't live up to some of their previous encounters, unfortunately. Especially when it was at WrestleMania. I didn't think, unless someone wants to argue against me.
Perfect for what it was, just too short.
Yeah, too short.
And then Kevin Owens didn't jump off the pirate ship.
In his defense, the pirate ship was fucking huge. Like, it was after I saw that, I was like, okay, he's not jumping.
I did hear a rumor there was a crash mat behind the pirate ship set up for a spot, but they couldn't use it because it was too wet.
Oh, I didn't hear that they couldn't use it, but I heard that there was a crash mat set up that would explain it if it was too wet. But again, safety, for how short the match was, I don't know how you fit that spot in. But I loved the end there. I thought the end was, you know, was exactly what we expected. so I didn't mind it. I wouldn't have minded Sami Zayn winning, and then that's what happened.
I feel as though they've kind of turned Sami Zayn a wee bit face there properly, have they not? Like, now he went from being the maniac that everyone's like, oh, you're just in a conspiracy, Sami, to everyone's been really sympathetic to him. And I loved having JBL back on commentary. I know he's a knob, but having him for one match was terrific.
Yeah, why did they bring out JBL for that match? It was bizarre.
So essentially what happened across the weekend is Tom Phillips got pulled last minute because of COVID protocols. So they were a commentator
that
down.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why you had a lot of different, you know, Booker T even jumped in for one. You had a lot of different commentators. Right.
So I've heard rumours that was Tom Phillips on Raw last night, or did they start with a
even get me started on his replacement.
Okay, we'll get to that. Fantastic. I haven't heard anything
about that in a minute. We'll get to that in a minute. Logan Paul, it was a Stone Cold ending. We all wanted Logan Paul getting stunner. So happy, happy days for everyone. Next up, United States Championship match, Riddle versus Sheamus. Sheamus going over and winning the belt. That was another bit of a surprise there. It was a good match.
Oh, aye. This was the kind of match that, again, I was like, oh, I know it's going to be a good match, but because, you know, I still had a few things to write up, I was like, I'll sacrifice this match. I've seen them wrestle a lot. You know, I don't need to watch it properly, so I only half paid attention. But what I see now is like, it's just what I expected. What I didn't expect was Sheamus winning, but I don't mind it because I think Sheamus is brilliant. He deserves like a WrestleMania moment. He's had a lot of them, but he deserved that one. And he was also wearing the same gear that he wore when he squashed Daniel Bryan a good few years ago.
I didn't know that.
As soon as I seen that gear, I was like, oh, maybe he's winning this, by the way.
arguably his best WrestleMania performance from Sheamus, to be fair. And that brogue kick spot looked brutal.
Finish was superb.
It looked brutal. And you could see,
I like the way Riddle just sat in the ring and selling it for like the next 5 minutes as his face was bleeding, looking genuinely surprised.
Yeah, no, it was good. I just hate what they've done with Matt Riddle's character. I really despise that they made.
Did you not like the birds were white this time with pirate hats?
Yeah, with pirate hats. Oh my god, you're the birds with pirate seagulls with pirate hats. They switched up from the parrots to seagulls. Oh my god, but hey ho, it was good for
hey ho. Well, you got a nice pirate one in there as well.
And then we get on to the Nigerian drum fight for the IC title and another title change.
No, I have a huge complaint about this match,
right? Okay, right,
this is the Nigerian drum match. They didn't use a single fucking drum as a weapon and they started off in a basic kendo stick match. What the fuck?
It's almost as if they didn't know what a Nigerian drum fight was until they realised that they'd said it. So
I was really disappointed. I expected Nigerian warriors beating drums on the outside. I thought it'd be an amazing spectacle. And then, no, we didn't. You didn't even get a drum used. It was just basically
a fight.
And Baba Tunde has had he's had more name changes than he's had matches, because he's now had three name changes. And he's
apparently
had two matches.
A general now, is he? He's also had a promotion.
Commodore Aziz.
Commodore Aziz. Name. This is Dabaketo. This is Dabaketo.
Dabaketo slash Baba Tunde. He's Polish and of Nigerian descent, so at least it makes sense nationality-wise. He is probably proud there.
Is Nigeria a socialist country? Because Commodore is a very socialist title.
I'm not politically informed enough to be able to answer that one, sadly. I love his gear, though. it looked apart.
So we've now got Dabaketo. We've got Dabaketo. We've got one big guy as a heater for AJ Styles, and then we've got the other guy now with Apollo Crews. So we've got Dabaketo on one side, or Commodore. What's his name?
Commodore Aziz,
and then we've got obviously Big Omos over there. When those two get together in the ring, it's going to be absolute
Royal Rumble.
Yeah, Royal Rumble moment.
But I think he looked good as well, but I do think, Apollo Crews, again, nice of him to get a wee WrestleMania moment.
Doesn't
hurt Big E too much. He can move on as well, but again, you fall into this thing where you've got Cesaro and Big E.
That's it. It's who's going to be up against Reigns. That's the next opponent.
You feed him Big E first. Cesaro's still being built.
Yeah, Big E's
ready to be fed.
Yeah,
Big E can come back from a feeding, but I don't
he's
think
he's been just up enough.
Yeah, he'll be fine. He can come back because Cesaro's not ready. He's not ready to be
fed. Right, okay. So we reckon Big E next up with Roman then. But yeah, I think Apollo Crews, the as a character in the last few months, has really been built and he's looked great. I think the character's changed, done all this, and now he's got this heater beside him to that's going to help matters as well. So good big heel action, like that. So Paul walks away as IC champion, and we reckon Big E on towards WrestleMania. Right, let's go to the Raw Women's Championship match. It was Oscar versus Rhea Ripley.
It was something I also had to bury from the Big E drum match. I've missed Big E's entrance. The rapper was so off point in
Wally.
He couldn't lip sync his own music, but we can move past that. I'm sorry.
I'm not a Wally fan myself, so I'm not going to defend
it. He was so off point. He kept fucking it up, but yeah.
It hurts me to say I don't think it was the worst musical performance of the night, which we'll get into in a
couple of matches.
Ripley versus Oscar did not. I don't know if it was the crowd. I don't know if it was a match that hadn't been built, but I just didn't think they connected. I didn't think.
Ripley is a bit weird as well.
I think just sometimes you get two people that are good but don't have chemistry.
Yeah.
I think it's just that, because, I mean, I know we'll mention it, but they've done a rematch on Raw as well that kind of was in the same vein. But it was the Ash Costello. I get it. That song must be fucking hard to perform, and particularly in an outdoor open air venue, because the stage isn't set up for music. It's just no other way to do it. Having her sing, she's fighting a losing battle, but it didn't sound good. It really didn't sound good.
if you do listen to the song back, you can tell that the main This Is My has been recorded on like three separate tracks. Do you know what I mean? They needed to have at least give her some kind of backing vocalist or something, maybe, but I'm assuming she's maybe not played that song live very often.
No, I don't think she ever has, because it's only a WWE song. Like, they just got her in to record the vocals for it, but I just feel like it was a hard song to do, because, like all WWE music, it's overproduced quite heavily before it actually gets to being a Titantron thing. So the entrance was like, and then the match, it was just one of the ones where, again, I'm not sure if we just had the high standard for the night before that kind of offset it, but it was just like, okay. We got the win. Okay.
I thought they just didn't seem to have the chemistry that, you looked at Bianca and Sasha the night before. I don't know if it's they hadn't worked together that often, because the build was so short. It was just, there wasn't much build to this match at all. And then we got the match. Maybe that it needed a bit more in-ring work with the two girls. It wasn't great. And then on to the main event, which was the match. Again, match of the night for me. We'll get to your match of the night in a minute, but Daniel Bryan, Reigns and Edge, we're all argued who's going to win this match, and it was Alex. You were right, weren't you? You said Roman Reigns, so yeah.
I don't know. I think Edge pinned Daniel Bryan first.
You see, I have a theory, right, after this, because of the way they've booked this now, is I have a bit of a theory that because the way they're going to tell the story, right, is that Edge lost to Roman because he turned himself heel, and they're going to have like a year of redemption arc, and he's going to turn himself back face and come full circle and beat Roman next year as a face, and that will be the story behind it. That's my call now, basically.
I think it's a good shout, because I mean, I know like Edge's character has been a bit of a dick, but we still want to cheer him. Like you still heard that Roman Reigns got some boos. That was nice. It's nice that we actually still get booed when he's meant to get booed. But I thought this was a great match. I've said that a few times. It wasn't quite as good as his facial expression at the Royal Rumble in front of fans the last time we seen him wrestle in front of fans, but it was still good.
Daniel Bryan, he just looked so good. I've got a screenshot of it and I've changed it multiple WhatsApp group fucking pictures.
I thought this was, I've mentioned it a few times, triple threat matches, I just think they can be really clunky and I'm not normally a fan of them. A fair few have changed my mind though, and this was up there with them. A 20-minute match, you know, 20 minutes, triple threat, I'd be like, it's probably not going to be very good. This was brilliant, and it was just one of the ones where, contrary to, you know, Sasha Banks, Bianca Belair, this had the build. The build was incredible, yeah. And then the match was great. So just everything was good about it. It just all paid off.
Yeah. Right person went over, Reigns going over.
Yeah, and I think they...
Either of them, I think.
Yeah, and they used the, as Gary said, they used the triple step stipulation really well. They built with it. They didn't have too much interference from, say, Jey Uso. And you forget how good Paul Heyman's face is at selling when he's just like, the camera work was terrific. Like whenever Reigns was in, when he was in that double, the double
cross
submission
face,
from the two
of
them.
Yeah, that was great.
Just Paul behind going absolutely insane. And you know, it just adds so many layers.
Yeah, and the headbutton spot between our button heads with each other was great.
Oh yeah, the double spear into each other. That was the one thing. I really wanted Daniel Bryan to spear the two of them. Yeah. I just think that would have been beautiful. Yeah. And he pulled his headbutt out, which I didn't think he was allowed to do anymore.
Yep. The concerto as well.
Well, if you're gonna pull that back, you can pull it back in the main event of WrestleMania.
I think this is, you know, as long as the only thing that would have been a wee bit dubious would have been if Reigns get pinned. But I think any outcome of this was fine because they just built it up so well.
Yeah, yeah. And then I reckon where they go next, we've talked about, I think Reigns will move on to a Big E now, maybe. But I think there's probably a story to tell between Edge and Daniel Bryan going forward, isn't there?
I think we'll get Edge, Daniel Bryan going forward. Yeah. I think that is the story to tell. I mean,
did you notice who was wearing very unified gear, though?
Oh, yes, Rated R. Rated RKO.
Both Edge and Randy were wearing white with red and black highlights as if they had colour coordinated. So maybe that could also be a little bit of a drop of, because now they're both heel again. So maybe that could be somewhere they can go together.
Yep, I thought that as well. And then somebody I seen pointed out that it might have just been because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers wear those colours. But at the same
Gary,
time, I'm like, but also I'm like, that's very face to wear the colours of the team that's playing there. And none of them are particularly face.
I thought that was, I spotted
that as well, and I was like, oh, that could be nice. I think it'd be a bit of a waste of both men, but it would be nice.
Yeah. So, match of the night for you guys?
Main event.
Yeah. Low light?
Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax winning.
Yeah.
The death of the Fiend, actually, for me. I think the fact it opened the show as well made it more painful.
Yeah. I said, that was a point. I said that if Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn opened the show, I think it would have been a very different feel to the full event. I think they just, like, Kevin Owens, like, how hard must it be to lift a crowd that is that deflated? But he done it, straight away just by kicking the ropes.
I literally can't believe that that's what they decided to start with, personally. You put that in the middle, or you put that pre-main event, because if you think it's going to be a questionable finish, you know, I mean, everyone's going to pump right back up the minute they hear Mark Ride of the Valkyries, aren't they? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, okay. WrestleMania then, as a whole, how does it rate as a event as a whole for the two nights? I've seen it really slain. I thought it was a decent WrestleMania. There was a lot of low points, but there was more high points than there was low points for me.
How much did we all say last year's WrestleMania was great? I think this was better than last year's.
Yeah.
So I get it. Night 2 was a wee bit disappointing. But last year as well, we look back and we remember the good stuff. Like, you don't really remember the bad stuff that happened. So I think in a year's time or something, we might think the same about this one. I thought it was really good, especially given the fact that it could have been completely cancelled within the first hour. I thought it was really good. When you think we get two main events that both delivered.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the undercards as well, in terms of Cesaro and Seth Rollins, I think it's hard to complain about it. I think if you're complaining about that, you're probably barking up the wrong tree in terms of where you're complaining about wrestling. And just watch Raw afterwards and you'll realise how good WrestleMania was.
Yes.
The thing to highlight as well is I think the night one was stronger than night two. And you know what it's like when your first night's better than your second night. People always remember how you finished, not how you started.
Yeah.
Taylor's starting strong. Ending, no, middle was a bit weak. Ending was actually also strong, so...
Yeah, maybe...
It
would have been nice, I think, to have had... Because it's the first WrestleMania back with crowds, having the crowd go out and, you know, having the... You know, there's been very few Manias where the heels went out as champion at the end. I don't think you can count them in one hand how many times that has happened. So it would have been nice, obviously, with the crowds being back in, to have a nice story of Daniel Bryan or a Drew going out as winner in the main event. But I guess you got that night one, Bianca.
I think that's the perfect thing about having two nights. You could do both.
Yeah, that's fine. That is true.
Also, we didn't have to go through a 7-hour wrestling show, right?
A lot to be said for that.
I'm sitting here saying I'm burnt out, yes, but at least I got to deal with it in manageable chunks over multiple days, not in one fucking sitting.
So WrestleMania, that was your WrestleMania week. Let's quickly, because it just happened last night, come to Raw. It's the Raw after WrestleMania. It's the big Raw of the year. It's when the NXT people pop up. It's when people you don't know about pop up. However, we got some of that. Gary, talk us through Raw last night. We had a change in commentary, first of all.
So we had Adnan Virk from MLB fame, I believe, which I would like to say it's difficult to throw somebody into this position, but he's accompanied now by Byron Saxton and Corey Graves. Did kind of expect that, you know, those two are going to carry a lot of the weight. They're going to be, you know, carrying the show and just letting this guy find his feet a bit. And they've done a really good job here. And I really don't want to dunk on the guy too much because I get how difficult it must be, especially if you've not got a wrestling background. But it came across as if the guy was watching his first wrestling show. Two phrases that kind of stood out for me. One, he went, nice little kick. It's like, it's wrestling, that's not selling anything. Nice little kick. And then, that's the kind of move that will hurt both of them. And it was just like,
what?
he had no knowledge. And play by play, again, color commentary, you can just stick a wee bit of personality and be a bit of a dick, be a heel, or, you know, be a babyface, and it'll work. You can find your feet. It's so hard to find your feet on play by play. And I think Tom Phillips did struggle at the start as well, and he grew into it. So I hold a wee bit of hope. But this guy, he just didn't have energy either.
There was no enthusiasm. At least Tom Phillips had that from the get-go.
So what was Tom Phillips' background before he joined WWE, out of interest?
Was he a broadcaster, but he was a WWE. He was a wrestling fan, but broadcaster generally for sports, like American
The problem
football.
Is that ever since Mauro, they've probably just assumed that other commentators can come in. But what they forgot was Mauro was A, a wrestling fan, and B, a fucking MMA commentator, which is the closest thing you can be to a wrestling commentator.
I seen there was a... Why? Because at least you can even put in things that wrestling fans want to know, the names of certain moves that's been done. But the thing about this guy was, it was just... like, the energy was a big point, because Mauro has the energy. Maybe too much for me. I'm no big on Mauro's style of commentary personally. But the one thing that a lot of people were saying about Adnan Virk in terms of praise, well, they were saying, he's bringing this real sports feel. He's no robotic. And I'm like, the real sports feel, I don't think he brings a real sports feel at all. It comes across as a guy that doesn't really know what he's talking about. I hope it changes next week. But for me, he, like, between that and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, Youngling Center, I think it's called, like, the Thunderdome is now moved. So it looks more cramped. I think it was off to a bad start. The first 50-odd minutes I thought were quite good. And then it just died on its arse. just became really bad. So the NXT returns and the major return. The Viking Raiders was one big return, and Charlotte Flair was a big return, cutting a brilliant promo. But apart from that, it was just bad.
That was it. So the row after WrestleMania, we had Bobby Lashley kicking off against Riddle, basically Riddle getting absolutely battered and buried.
Did they see the flip-flops turning into birds, which was a good highlight?
Yeah, that's very true. I guess he put that down to excuse that he was attacked before the bell, but yeah. Viking Raiders return. It was a decent tag match with Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin, whatever you're going to call them these days.
Have you seen their replacements?
Well, yes. We're going to get to that. We'll get to that. We had a rematch from Ripley. We had Charlotte Flair come down to the ring, cutting a great promo. And just
that was a highlight of the night for me. Yeah. Absolutely amazing promo. Just seemed Charlotte very comfortable.
Charlotte being a dickhead again, which is she should never be faced. Charlotte should never be faced because she's just, you know, a dickhead. But so we're Ripley versus Asuka from WrestleMania, replay of that for the women's championship. But Charlotte came down, interfered, and I'll be interested to see what happens to that going forward if they go triple.
I was a bit of ballhead away for tweeting this, and a few people did, and thankfully had to rescind their words, and I was very close to it when I was going to say, this is a lot better than the WrestleMania match, and then they had a big slip on the apron that just was not good.
And then they had the crucifix kind of pin attempt thing that went wrong. Again, the chemistry just wasn't there. It was a bit... Yeah, but Charlotte's great. I mean, Charlotte is, you know, we talked earlier on about Io being the best. She's got a long way to go to beat Charlotte for me.
I think Charlotte Flair's weak point was always promos. I thought they were fine. They're just a wee bit kind of robotic. Sometimes didn't quite have the intensity. Last night was just, it seemed like she didn't have a script. It seemed like she was just there, like bullet points and just on you go. And it was
she was great. Then we had Miz and John Morrison versus Damian Priest in a handicap match with obviously the whole thing was to promote Miz and Mrs. coming back because Maurice was there as well.
And we get Damian Priest's first main roster loss being to a man in his pants with his trousers around his ankles.
Yes.
It's baffling. I get it, but I hate it.
Yeah. So there we had that, and then we're back to the well with Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax versus Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose, which was terrible because they just focused on Mandy Rose's trip at WrestleMania.
She's no longer Mandy Rose in WWE's eyes. She is woman who slipped at WrestleMania, and that's now got to be her character. It's like when R-Truth said her name wrong 10 years ago, and now he's just been funny guy. Ever since, he's just been funny guy, and he's never going to be taken seriously.
And the whole spot of Nia Jax slipping on to cause the match.
Nia Jax is now a klutz. She fell twice, I think. Yeah, she fell coming into the ring and then off. Yeah. And then the most annoying part for me is the fact that the faces just left. That's fine. We attacked Nia Jax earlier in the night, completely fearless, babyface, you know, absolutely brilliant. And then, oh no, Nia Jax is angry. We'll just take the count out loss.
Yep. There we go. Then New Day versus Elias and Jackson Riker, at least like New Day, won that one. And
another
then,
awkward moment for race relations in WWE right there, isn't it?
Jackson Riker with his big America flag on his trunks.
Then after earlier on the night, Drew, Randy and Braun all making their case for being number one contender, we had a triple threat for the number one contender match, and we had Drew winning that, so we get a WrestleMania replay between him and Bobby at WrestleMania Backlash. But then we had MVP bringing out T-Bar and Mace to track Drew at the end. What the
I don't get it. Like, you've let go, like, storyline, you've let go of two guys that were beating these guys every week to bring the guys that have been losing to your former partners.
Why would you not also like even try and repackage them?
Why not put them?
But
yeah,
I hope they wear suits with the masks. that's my one.
Mask them. Go back to their NXT.
Have they not changed them slightly so they're now both wearing the same mask?
Yes.
Yeah. So like, I think those two are going to do some kind of weird ascension type.
And T-Bar's hair is growing back and he's not wearing the makeup anymore, which I keep noticing because I'm going, that'd be perfect for an unmasking. I just don't get it. I feel like it's good for the guys, you know, getting the spot, but
why
I don't care for it.
Why take Shelton and Cedric Alexander, the best thing on Raw, out of a fucking great faction, and then add these. Oh, just what a mess. What an absolute mess. They couldn't even brought Cedric and Shelton back in. You know what I mean? They could have easily have done that, seeing the deal's been broke between, you know, and they're back with the Hurt Business. Oh.
Like, what would have been better than last night? Anything. Like, I honestly think that I don't think they could have done worse than what they've done with it, because they've cut the legs out for Mason T-Bar anyway. I mean, I think they look good in terms of appearance and stuff, but they've just cut the legs out for under them.
No, anyway, almost or AJ on the show either. No, they didn't.
Sheamus, it was on Raw Talk as well.
No, Sheamus.
It's like, see the big wins that you had that made you tune into Raw. Ah, forget about them. You're not going to see the folk that are champions.
And all we got was Viking. It was great to see Viking Raiders back. Actual tag team for doing tag team wrestling. That was good. Charlotte being back was good as well. But again, nothing exciting. We didn't have those pop moments that we all remember for the Raw. I guess it helped.
I don't think the Raw after WrestleMania is quite what the Raw after WrestleMania used to be.
No, especially with the crowds not being in.
I was going to say, probably struggled as well with the crowd being there for 2 days and then not there the last day. But it was just a bit of a mess. Like, especially having zero NXT arrivals, because that's the one thing that everybody now expects. I know it's not a given. And also, if they had an NXT arrival or mentioned people's NXT pasts, it would do the thing that Triple H said and perfectly lead into to tomorrow night's NXT, or tonight's NXT. Tomorrow's when you're watching Raw.
Yeah, well, I guess that we started off high. Night one of NXT Stand and Deliver, we've ended in a complete low.
Because I was saying it was the 7 days of WWE, so tonight is the seventh day. So they can end on a high with NXT. Because this is going to be, what, the third NXT in 6 days?
Yeah.
So this is if we're being completely canon, I mean, AEW has been mentioned an abundance on WWE's network this weekend. So
yeah,
AEW and Wednesday's kind of.
You could even talk about Chris Jericho in the Austin podcast, which was really, a really good watch. Really enjoyed that. But yeah, so all in all, guys, a week of wrestling in the WWE. What do we take from this full week? What's your main takeaway from this full week of wrestling?
Don't watch Raw. Don't watch Raw and you'll probably like everything else.
Exciting times. We've got, I guess, a lot of storylines going forward from it, and we'll see where we are come SummerSlam time, I guess. I think we might see some SmackDown. I think we might see some NXT people on SmackDown this Friday. I've got a funny feeling Finn Balor might turn up.
It could be a shout. The only thing is that I think, I mean, maybe it's been long enough, but it did seem like when he went back to NXT, it was like, if you could have translated his promo and his interviews into two words, it was thank fuck. But I don't know, maybe enough times elapsed and maybe different times, and SmackDown is a really good show, so yeah. Wouldn't mind it.
Yeah, well, that's it, guys. Thank you very much for joining us in this wrestling week that was. Thanks again to everyone for being involved at Patreon, patreon.com/wrestlingdaft, and getting involved in the watch along. Lots of content up there from the weekend when Grado gave you his WrestleMania moments as well, so you can check that out up there now. We'll be back to normal service, the return of many features. Gary, you've been speaking to a lot of people. You spoke to Sin Cara.
That's the night.
Was that tonight?
Eagerly awaited. I like how you mentioned Hunter's are big names. Sin Cara, that's the biggest of them all.
So hopefully, is it the original or the...
It's Hunico. It's the man who took over, who is now Cinta de Oro.
So the sequel to Sin Cara.
It's the one that, and I'm going to ask him about this because I'm on the other side of the screen, so he can't beat the shit out of me, but I'm going to ask him about this, but it's the one that got involved in the altercations with Simon Gotch and Chris Jericho and got sent to anger management.
Brilliant. Fantastic. So hopefully we'll hear that interview very soon. We'll be back to normal service. All the usual features will be back next week. Gary and Alex, thank you very much for that. There's been a lot to take in over the last week. Hopefully we'll just add to the more wrestling content to consume for you guys. Remember, you can get Rab and Grado on the main show. They'll be back this Friday. They'll not be changing. Buddies and Putovers, List of Wrestling Daft, Running, Wrestling Daft Road Stories. I'll be back with Rab and Grado on Friday. Until next time though, gents, I don't know if there's any much more marking out we can do, but you keep marking out.
Audio Frontier.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.